Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard it.
That's beautiful. Oh, God. That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the tap. Wow.
Here comes a submission. And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout. He's out. Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the December 12th edition of the MMA Report podcast with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Floyd. Come here on this week's edition of the show. We're going to talk about what happened on Tuesday in California with John Jones and the California State Athletic Commission. Going to play you a portion of the interview that Andy Foster did with Mark Raimondi, which is going to lead into a much bigger conversation about the USADA-UFC relationship. Speaking of the UFC, we're going to recap what happened last Saturday night at UFC 231. Plus, we're going to have three interviews for you. All fires are you fighting this weekend. You're going to hear from Michael Chandler, who's going to finally have his rematch against Brent Primus on Friday at Bellator 212. Of course, that event will be on Paramount, also will be available on DAZN. And then the final two interviews will be guys who are going to be part of the UFC on Fox 31 preliminary card on Saturday in Milwaukee. I'll talk to Zach Otto, who's going to be taking on Dwight Clark in the feature prelim on FS1, and we'll talk to Adam Milstead, who will be the feature prelim on UFC Fight Pass. Plus, we're going to preview all of this week's MMA. Of course, Friday, we've got Bellator 212. Saturday, UFC on Fox 31 and Bellator 213. Plus, we're going to get into some MMA news and notes items. And also, we got to mention, today is a three-year anniversary of Conor McGregor, Jose Aldo. Does not seem like it was 3 years ago. And of course, you can always subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. New episode comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com. Daniel, Tuesday was an interesting day in MMA. This it all kind of slipped up on me, this John Jones hearing with the California State Athletic Commission. And boy, man, we got a lot to talk about when it comes to this situation.
Well, Jason, we have a lot to talk about. I think the first thing that came to my mind seeing what happened was you had the decision that John Jones is going to get licensed to fight, but you also had a lot of blowback, or you had a lot of communication from Andy Foster and others that this was a real questionable process, the whole USADA deal. And my biggest question is, like, the reason why John Jones, to me, got licensed in California is because at the beginning of the process, it was essentially said that California would honor what USADA did. So my biggest question is, if we were to redo this process, Jason, do you think that would still be the case? Do you think that would have been the precedent set at the beginning of this ordeal?
Well, the answer simply is no on that aspect, and more just because you're going to hear what Andy Foster had to say. But the most interesting part to me that came out of Tuesday's hearing was a comment made by one of the commissioners where Martha Sheen Urquidez, probably butchered the hell out of that name, but she proposed that Jones enroll himself in 3 to 4 months of testing with VADA, the Voluntary Anti-Doping Association. And this is what Martha said, quote, "I know you said that you're happy with USADA has established that you didn't do this intentionally in your last test and all of that. But you and I both know there is a large number of people who still have some doubts, right? They are out there. And it's not just a little bit of doubt, but there are people who have serious doubts over this. So I, for one, would like to put those doubts to sleep and to put them away once and for all, and for people to believe you, that you are that talented and that you are the greatest and that you can win a fight just clean. And that this is John Jones, and to put those doubts away once and for all. So I have this idea. I'm going to put it out there and see if you agree to it." Now, Jones, along with his attorney, Howard Jacobs, and USA executive Mark Ratner, are agreement in principle on this proposal. But to me, that is, out of everything, you know, we'll hear what Andy Foster had to say here momentarily. Of everything that happened on Tuesday, to me, that is the biggest thing, where we now have a commissioner with one of the most prominent athletic associations out there that is saying, you know what? Hey, yes, we understand that you've got this USADA testing, but we want a third-party administrator that has nothing to do with the promotion you fight for.
Yes. USADA, it was like a big game of Jenga when USADA reduced John Jones' suspension. They pulled one piece out, and the pieces continue to crumble. Because if what this commissioner is saying is simply this, it's this. It's, well, USADA tested you, but you need to get tested by someone so we know you're clean. So then what's the point of USADA? What's the point of USADA if you need to get tested by another organization in order for the public to think that you're clean? USADA has lost its reputation in record time. I mean, they went – I mean, it is just – it is rough when you have someone who commissioner – and again, like those that are commissioners, man, usually they're real conservative when it comes to their opinions or – and again, it's not necessarily an opinion, but they usually don't say things like this unless it's egregiously bad. And what's being – what's being said here is we don't trust USADA, and neither does the public.
Yeah, you know, in terms of on the record, off the record, we never hear anybody on the record make these type of comments. And that, to me, is what stuck out about this. And this is, you know, and you look at USADA, and there's a lot of things you can point to. And I'll point to one right now, and that's Grant Dawson. You know, Grant revealed on his Instagram, I want to say on Friday of last week, that, you know, his case was dismissed with USADA. 13 months later, and this was the statement from the UFC on Tuesday, quote, UFC was informed by USADA that Grant Dawson received a dismissal of his potential anti-doping policy violation that was first reported in November 2017. This dismissal was based on the likelihood that the ingestion of the prohibited substance occurred prior to Grant coming under the UFC anti-doping program. We understand that Grant was cooperative throughout the USADA's investigations. Today's dismissal of Grant's case reinforces UFC's recent decision to resolve potential anti-doping policy violations before making them public. We wish Grant the best in his fighting career, whether it be here with the UFC or elsewhere. And that quote's very interesting, by the way, Daniel, where it says, we wish Grant the best in his fighting career, whether it be here with UFC or elsewhere. Ooh, if you're Grant Dawson, you can't feel real good about that part of it. But once again, why is it taking 13 goddamn months? Like, you look at a guy like Grant Dawson, who, you know, was just getting to the UFC after winning on the Contender Series. Like, I look at this, and I look at this process of when you have to go through this, where it's going to cost so much money. How did Grant pay for all this? I mean, and that's the problem, and the fact that you have to hold USADA harmless is the other issue with this. But, I mean, man, this has been a very interesting 24 hours in the UFC with their drug testing program.
Yeah, dude. It's like, oh, my gosh. We need to start a GoFundMe for Grant Dawson. I mean, this guy only has like 500 Twitter followers. There's no way he's making bank in the cage, and you take it away from him for a year. This dude's 24 years old. You only have so many years in this sport, and it gets dismissed 13 months later. That in and of itself should disqualify an organization from having any type of authority. Like, how did it take so long? Did they just leave the Grant Dawson case like someone forgot to do it? Like, I forgot to do a homework until the night before it was due? This is a joke.
Well, it's not like there's a backlog of cases that USADA just can't. I mean, it's just that's the issue with this. Like, it should not take 13 months for someone to go through the process. You know, could you imagine if a commission took 13 months to decide on a drug testing issue?
It would be nuts. It's literally in a world where time is so valuable and so important, 13 months is just – it disqualifies you from administering, you know, policy. It really does, Jason. It's just a joke. And again, it affects a guy who absolutely is not in a position to be affected by something like this. Like this guy is so young in his career, a year dismissed, and then you also have that awful messaging by the UFC that he might be let go. It's like he won't be like – you should not let him go, guys. Calm down. Like this guy – this guy's had a rough year. Yeah. Give him a break here. Yeah, and I will say about California, My one slight criticism of how they handled this is from the get-go, Jason, I did feel as though they kept their hands clean and they kind of did not – they didn't have they gave away the responsibility of this case to USADA.
They did.
They can kind of point at USADA and be like, well, he's licensed, but that's because USADA did. And then they go out and now they're going to – you know, at least the messaging coming out of them is that they're not content with USADA. And that I appreciate, but there is a slight negativity to the fact that they realized, I mean, I don't know what they did, but this was a huge case and they kind of stepped away from it.
Yeah, and speaking of what was said, I want to play a portion of the interview Mark Romani of MMAFighting.com did with Andy Foster. This audio you're going to hear is 5 minutes and 50 seconds long, where Andy Foster talks about the entire process of how all this played out.
John Jones is under the USADA program, which is USADA is the anti-doping partner of the UFC. And in that case, which kind of was a dual jurisdiction case, in their case, he was given 15 months. It was 18 months after USADA, and then arbitration bumped down to 15 months. Now, one of the things that you said today in the meeting was that you were wrong about how you approached this, and we were at a CSAC meeting in February where you deferred in some ways to USADA, that the commission would kind of see what USADA would do as far as the suspension length and then go by that. Why did you say that you were wrong to do that?
We yielded executive discretion granted by the legislature of the state to a third-party drug testing company paid for by a promoter. Now, I mean, it's a good thing. You heard me say the UFC has done many great things by cleaning up the sport, by hiring USADA, by doing these things. But the penalties are not, in my view, they're not always consistent. And in any reason, it causes more burden for the fighter. They have to fight with the commission or you know, adjudicate with the commission. And they have to adjudicate with USADA. Sometimes those are the same. Sometimes there's not. I say that because the process needs to be fixed. This doesn't need to keep going. We don't need – John Jones should not have had to been here twice. He should not have had to go through this USADA process, in my view. He should have got his 15 or 18 months back in February, because whether I think he meant to cheat or not, he had it in his system. Nobody's disputing that. He's getting in trouble. He paid a hefty penalty for that substance in his system. It didn't mean that we have to talk about Daniel Cormier a little bit in this thing. I mean, there has to be justice for him in this sense. But getting back to Mr. Jones, this process is not just about Mr. Jones. It's about many of these athletes. And if you have money to fight with, i.e. attorneys, and you can test supplements and all these things, and I guess this is just like it is in any part of the criminal justice system. This is not criminal, but any justice system. If you can afford to get good defense, you're able to prove certain things. The USADA program has been very helpful in cleaning up the sport. Here in California, and I can't speak to other jurisdictions, but here in California we have sole jurisdiction. I just need the results. Collect the urine, send me the results. We'll take it from there on our licensees.
What changed between February, when you said you would defer to USADA as far as a suspension length and a sanction, to now when you're saying that you were wrong to do that?
Well, I mean, I just didn't like the process that he went through. He couldn't get – it took a long time and ended up having to go to an arbitrator. The arbitrator reduced the initial recommendation that I think USADA had sent out from 18 months to 15 months. I don't want to tell you wrong, but it was something like that. And the process is affecting a fighter's ability to make a living. There's a lot to that. Obviously, it needs to be, the actions need to be punitive, but it's this commission's job and other commissions around the country's job to protect the public and to protect the public welfare. And I think it's a little bit beyond the scope of a drug testing company to assume that role, and we allowed it. We allowed it. I went along with it. The commission went along with it. But if, when I have it to do over again, I'm sure probably in time I'll have it to do over again, we'll deal with this differently.
Is there a concern because there is that financial relationship between the UFC and USADA?
I really don't see that. I really think USADA acted quite independently in this situation. I just didn't like the way that it kept going. He had to pay attorneys twice. He had to spend money. He had to keep being, you know, and part of it's being, you know, he had to be nervous twice. And what if the suspensions didn't line up, or what if they came in too low and the California commissioner said, no, we're not doing that. That's too low. Or what if they came in too high? That was my initial concern. Initially, they were talking about 4 years. I thought that would be a miscarriage of justice. He would not be, you know, there's a good chance that he will not be the same fighter in 4 years. Now, I don't know that. I don't want to say that, but people age, and if you're out for 4 years, you get rusty. I mean, there's lots of things I can say. He's the best in the world right now. He's at the top of his game. We'll see how good he is against Alexander here in a couple weeks or whenever. But it's not about the financial relationship. I think I don't have a problem with UFC paying USADA to do the drug testing. And I think that's fine. And look, the adjudication process might work in some jurisdictions that don't do this on a fairly regular basis. We're okay over here. We have the Attorney General's office that helps us, and we'll get this done.
And that was Andy Foster talking to Mark Romani of MMAfighting.com. Daniel, there was a couple of things that Andy said there that really stuck out to me, and I'll just kind of go through my list. Where he first off starts about how he was wrong, how he handled and approached this situation, going back to February, where he allowed USADA to basically say, hey, you guys do what you want to do. He talked about how the process needs to be fixed, and, you know, how he felt bad for John and the financial aspect of, you know, paying attorney fees and how many times he had to go through this. You know, saying just send me the results. That's all you need to do. And paraphrasing here, send me results and let the commission handle the proper penalties. You know, talked about how he does have no concerns with the financial relationship between the UFC and USADA. You know, the miscarriage of justice of thinking of 4 years was just, you know, was not what should have been there. And talking about the adjudication process of this. So that's what stuck out to me. Let me get your thoughts on what you heard from there from Andy.
Yeah, I thought, you know, you could tell he was really, really amped up about this topic. And it's kind of refreshing, firstly, just to hear someone in Andy Foster's position give an interview like that. So I appreciate that aspect of him. You know, what was interesting was he didn't go out and talk trash about USADA. He laid it out logically about how USADA can still be a part of the framework with the testing process, but the process of adjudication was flawed in the John Jones aspect. And it's hard to argue that. It's hard to argue that, and it's also hard to argue that when you do have a group like USADA that is funded by the UFC, when the adjudication process goes a certain way that benefits the UFC monetarily, it is impossible not to watch it and have questions. So the idea of taking that out of USADA's hands, I don't know who would disagree with that, firstly. The thing is, I think the one person that would be the UFC. I think that they may be the ones who would say, yeah, it's all right. There's probably never going to be a smoking gun with the John Jones thing. I think a lot of what happened was a lot of subtlety and indirect pressure. But I think this was a huge deal. There won't be many consequences. The consequences John Jones faced aren't what they should have been for a guy who was caught a couple times here. And in terms of justice for Daniel Cormier, look, the only justice Daniel Cormier is going to get is the payday he gets when he fights John Jones again. That's the only justice he's going to get. But I tell you what, that might not be the worst justice in the world. I think he might appreciate that pay-per-view paycheck whenever those two guys fight.
Yeah, I just kind of wonder what's going to be kind of the fallout of everything Andy said there. Because, I mean, look, you don't hear executive directors publicly come out and say what Andy said there. You know, and you love, I mean, look, from our aspect, we love hearing that, you know, someone in Andy's position. I mean, let's be honest about it. Andy, you know, if he's not the most, has the most power as an executive director, he's number two. You know, I don't think a lot of people view Bob Bennett as the most powerful executive director. Of course, Bob Bennett, the executive director of Nevada State Athletic Commission. I mean, you know, to me, when you look at the top two regulators in the sport, it's Mike Mazzulli, who's, you know, the president of the ABC. And then number two is Andy Foster. And, you know, earlier this summer, I had a great conversation with both of those guys. And there's issues with the USADA testing program. But Andy, in that interview, made it clear, like, look, you know, USADA and the UFC, they're doing good things. But I think there is a lot of fighters who will hear what Andy said and will say, preach, Andy, preach.
I think so. And I think what we learned here is this process won't repeat itself again. We will not have a process in which Andy Foster is the head of a commission and is going to give the responsibility to USADA. That's what we learned here. That's the precedent that's being set. Unfortunately, this was absolutely, I think, the biggest case we will ever have when it comes to USADA. I don't think there'll be a bigger case unless a guy like Conor McGregor tests positive.
Yeah, there will
be no bigger case. So the unfortunate deal, Jason, is in the biggest case, there was massive failure. Moving forward, though, I think it's clear that California is not going to hand off the responsibility. What is interesting is how this affects USADA moving forward. If this group still stays, if their results are still honored by commissions across the board, if their justice process still is, I think we're going to see the results obviously still be honored, because at the end of the day, there's a big financial cost to testing guys. And if the UFC is going to cover it, I think all these commissions will take advantage of that. But in terms of the adjudication process, I think we can all but write the eulogy for that for USADA.
I heard a number on drug testing costs the other day. I was blown away.
Was it? Or was it just because of how expensive it was?
How expensive it was, yeah. Very, very expensive for some jurisdictions. And, you know, I mean, look, these are – athletic commissions are not they're not a for-profit business. I mean, you know, a lot of this, you know, really comes down to is how much money is a car – what is the tax bill of that car going to be? And for some of these smaller commissions, they just can't afford it.
Well, I mean, look, like, for people listening to this, I mean, it's not like you get drug tested all the time at your job, I'm assuming. Most of us don't.
No, well, since I'm a small business owner, no, I do not drug test myself.
You know, at my job, we only get drug tested when, like, there's a report that one of us is doing something, you know. We get drug tested when we get the job, and we don't get drug tested until there's an issue.
I've never been drug tested for a job.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, when, you know, back when, you know, I started at Clear Channel back in 2002, there was no drug test.
I figured they would have I guess that makes sense. Maybe. I don't know when marijuana was invented, Jason.
I've never. I mean, look in high school, odd jobs, never was asked to take a drug test. You know, while I was in school, I was working for my family's business. So obviously, you know, you're not getting drug tested by your family.
Yeah.
And then when I went to work for Clear Channel, no, I was never drug tested. And I never heard of anyone getting drug tested.
It costs money, man. And I'm assuming that's why your heroin addiction has thrived throughout the years. But yeah, the moral of the story is it costs these organizations money. I mean, a lot of people will do it in the beginning, but they're not going to do regular drug testing. And, that is the value USADA provides, Jason. If UFC is willing to foot the bill, that's where the commission will work in congruence with the UFC, if they're willing to foot the bill, because the amount of testing you have to do to keep this a clean sport with the roster size, the UFC, the roster size, the Bellator, and other major promotions running in America, that costs a lot of money.
No, it does, but you know, let's move on to what happened last weekend in Toronto, UFC 231. hell of a pay-per-view, you know, right from the start with Thiago Santos and Jimmy Manuel. I mean, that is how you start a pay-per-view off, where you're very strategic in the fight you put on there. Those guys put on a hell of a fight. Akeem Dawodu, a split decision win over Kyle Bochniak. I don't know what that judge was looking at that scored that fight 2-1 for Kyle Bochniak. I'm still baffled by that. Gunnar Nelson getting that submission win against Alex Oliveira, where it went from literally a regular MMA fight to a horror movie in about 2 seconds when Gunnar landed that elbow and then locked in the rear naked. Then Valentina, clear win over Jovani Jacek. Max Holloway, man, whew. You know, we were all worried about Max Holloway's health, but I think we're more worried about Brian Ortega's health heading out of that fight. And kudos for the doctor stopping that fight after the fourth round. When it comes to the prelims, you know, really, I think the thing that sticks out to you, the surprise of the night had to be Diego Lima with that knockout win over Chad Laprise. You know, and Nina Ansaroff, got to mention, she's also the big surprise of that prelims. Unanimous decision win, very clear win. For her, I want to start off with Thiago Santos. Do you think Thiago Santos knows how to throw a jab? Because I swear, I never see Thiago Santos. It is, I mean, literally, both of those guys came in that fight, and it was just power shot after power shot. I mean, they were looking to knock each other out with one single punch.
It was a crazy game of, like, game theory or battleship, in that even if either one of them wanted to throw a jab, they knew the other guy was coming with some heavy leather. So if he's going to come with some heavy leather, I'm going to respond with the wild hook, with the wild cross. So it felt like these two guys, Jason, egged each other on. Man, I loved that first round. That was just, it was a hell of a way to start the pay-per-view. It really was. It's like the perfect fight you want to start off a pay-per-view if you're bringing your friends over. It's just, oh, yeah. They may not know who Thiago Santos is. They may not know who Jimmy Manuel is, but you have these two big guys playing rock'em sock'em robots, and it's perfect. And it was a great fight, a great win for Thiago Santos. Not necessarily something where you watch the fight and go, that was a technical masterpiece, but artistically.
It was a fun fight to watch.
Oh, yeah, it was.
And man, you're spot on. That is the perfect fight. You're having friends over to watch the pay-per-view who are not, you know, true fight fans. That's the fight you want on first.
Yeah, and it was great matchmaking. The Dawodu Bochniak fight was another one where I thought was going to be great, but it really wasn't. But, you know, your friends could have got some beers, and when they got back in time, they were able to be horrified by all the blood coming from Alex Oliveira. I had not seen a cut like that in quite a while, but that's a nice one out of Gunnar, who really needed that finish in the second round.
Before we get into the main event, Thiago Santos, obviously a guy now at 205 pounds. As I look at the top 10 in the UFC, there are three fights I say don't book him at. Do you know what those three fights are?
What three wrestlers are you looking at?
I'm looking at Jan Blachowicz, Corey Anderson, and Lior Latifi. Do not book Thiago Santos against either one of those guys. Anybody else in the top 10, book him against the fight I'd like to see. Thiago Santos, Dom Reyes.
Oh, that's a great fight to me. That's absolutely a great fight, Jason. I don't know if they're going to make that one, though. I feel like they're going to – I feel like the thing is, like as great as that fight is, man, it's almost like you want to give each of those guys a light heavyweight legend to go up against.
Oh, so they can use the legend. You are reading my mind. You know who they're going to book him against.
They're Shogun.
Poor Shogun. Poor Shogun.
I know. Watch Shogun win the fight anyway. But, yeah, I think Shogun is the guy they match him up with. Just because that's the basic formula they, like, do all the time, which it works. But, you could see him pole vault up. And
oh, that's a main event of a UFC fight night card on ESPN.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then you could find another you can put Greg Hardy on that one, too, you know. You just put him on every card. Gosh darn it.
In terms of the main event, Max Holloway, what a great performance. You know, obviously there was a lot of uncertainty with Max heading into last week. And then just he went out there and said, you guys forgot about what I can do. And probably the best moment is after going into the fourth round, him telling Joe Rogan, I'm ending it this round. And he just went out and just battered Brian Ortega. Look, Brian Ortega showed a lot of heart in that fight. I mean, even though that eye was, I want to say it was his left eye, was just an awful shape, he kept coming forward. He kept coming at it. But, man, and of course, the talk about you know, Max Holloway, where does he kind of stand as the greatest featherweight of all time? Clearly, he's in the conversation. You know, it's three guys you mentioned: Jose Aldo, Conor McGregor, Max Holloway. But man, if Max Holloway stays at 45, I think he's only a title defense, maybe one title defense away from truly having a claim as the greatest featherweight of all time, and that would be a win against Frankie Edgar.
Yeah, man. A win against Frankie Edgar really gives him the win over the who's who of the featherweight division. Obviously, there's one glaring name that he doesn't have a victory over, and it's Conor. But
That's a fight I want to see.
Yeah, and that's a fight that honestly probably isn't even going to happen in the weight class. It will likely, I think, happen at 155. But for Max Holloway, I think for him, I think his priority in his career has to be putting himself in a position to get that Conor fight. And I think, look, watching UFC 231's main event, Jason, I picked Brian Ortega. I thought this was going to be a close fight. And look, this was an awesome fight. Like, this was as awesome as a dominant fight can be, because Ortega was still landing plenty of shots for sure, and it was really exciting. It's just that Max's offense was just so dominant, so controlling each and every round. I thought this was going to be a close fight. I thought Ortega was going to win. This fight happened, and Max Holloway showcased the great amount of distance between him and Ortega, which is an impressive accomplishment. I mean, he really put himself on the king as the kingpin of the featherweight division. This is something we knew, but something I personally needed to see again, given that he has not fought in slightly over a year. So this was a return to form for Max Holloway. This guy is very clearly one of the best 145ers of all time. A win over Frankie Edgar, I think, would put him over the top. I think if he retired today, you couldn't criticize anyone who made the case. Just looking at the massive win streak he's compiled, it gets tiring just to count them all up, Jason. And this was a tremendous fight. I think Ortega and Max Holloway, if Holloway stays at 155, I think you look at his frame and – excuse me, 145. I think you look at his frame and you think this is a lightweight body. But if he stays there, they're going to fight multiple times. Ortega's too talented not to get another title shot down the line. But in this fight, it's hard to watch it and not think, man, Max Holloway is going to hold on to the featherweight championship for as long as he stays in the weight class.
Here's the crazy thing about the fight. In the fourth round, Max Holloway landed 134 of 196 significant strike attempts. Brian Ortega landed 110 in the entire fight.
That is phenomenal. A phenomenal stat. I feel like 139 significant strikes in the fourth round has to be a record for a fourth round.
Dude, he landed 307 strikes in the fight.
Just ask yourself this, Jason. How tired would you be if you had to punch a punching bag 139 times really hard in 5 minutes?
I'd be dead.
That's what this guy did in the fourth round of a UFC championship fight. You would be dead. Yeah, this was crazy, man. I can't wait to see Holloway. Like the only thing we're going to say every time Max Holloway fights is Holloway McGregor. And I guess it's just on Max Holloway to make himself marketable. I don't know what he's got to do. Like, I think he's just got to go out there and save little children in the ocean. He's got to deliver babies. He's got to go out and perform surgery. Like, he has got to do things. He's got to go on the Ellen DeGeneres show. He's got to become a meme, because I want to see Max Holloway fight Conor McGregor. And the thing is, they put themselves in the cage. Holloway, I believe, will be a pretty decent favorite against McGregor whenever that fight happens.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, it's been 5 years. When I look at the top three fights in order that I want to see Max Holloway, one, and I tweeted this on Saturday night, is Max Holloway Conor McGregor. Number two, Max Holloway, Frankie Edgar. Number three, Max Holloway, Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Ooh, I would love to see that one, but to be honest with you, I would rather see Max Holloway take on Tony Ferguson.
Man, that would be insane.
Yeah, that would be insane. Like, the thing with Khabib Holloway is you get, like, champion versus champion, and there's a good chance Khabib beats Ferguson in a fight. So he may just be the best 155er on the planet. But Ferguson Holloway, now that to me is just mixed martial arts pornography. But it's like pornography with a good story. So it's like an Oscar movie with porn. That's what that fight would be. So I would go Ferguson Holloway, but there are just so many good fights out there, and I'm glad I nailed the metaphor.
Valentina Shevchenko, clear win over Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Are we
Is Joanna the GOAT?
No,
have we
not
figured it out?
Clearly not. You know, it was interesting listening to her after the fight, kind of talking about, you know, wanting to take one more shot at 115, but then at the same time she's talking about how great she felt at 125. And I'm sitting there going, is 115 not really what you should be doing? Kind of have mixed feelings about that. But to me, you know, look, there's not, you know, Jessica Ai, another fight that goes the distance, and she's clearly has to be what's next. I mean, you know, she definitely took advantage of her mic time, you know, in her interview with Joe Rogan, of, you know, but, you know, one of the things that clearly hurts Jessica Ai, you realize you have to go back to 2014 to find a stoppage victory for Jessica Ai. And that was against Leslie Smith, where Leslie Smith's ear was about to come off. But if you know, if you go before that Leslie Smith fight, you know what fight you have to go back to?
Is it what fight?
Zola Frosto, 2012, Bellator 83.
Wow. Zola Frosto. That is crazy. Yeah, I'm not excited for Jessica Ai versus Valentina Shevchenko. You know, Joanna Jędrzejczyk's so talented, and Valentina clearly beat her. I mean, it was easy. It was textbook. And my thought watching this fight, Jason, was like, Valentina Shevchenko is going to have 10 successful title defenses in the women's flyweight division.
There was never a moment watching that fight that I thought Joanna was going to turn it around.
And every time she could, she maybe on the feet, Valentina just took her down, you know.
With it was, ease.
Yeah, it was – and the size played a big role. And I think that's maybe why Joanna thinking about going down to 115. I mean, Joanna is, to me, clearly the second most talented fighter at flyweight thus far. I think it's not close at all. And there was just such a big gap between her and Valentina. So I don't know what she does next. She's got the skill level to challenge her titles at either weight class. But yeah, my thought was, man, Valentina versus Jessica Ai, man, I'm more interested in Nina Ansaroff putting on 10 pounds and taking on Shevchenko after Saturday night. You know, like her performance, like the Jessica Ai fight was bad. I did not enjoy her versus Chookagian. That was just boring. I it was one of those fights where I don't know if it's just me, but it's like you're watching the TV and then you realize you haven't been paying attention. You're like, I've been thinking about my mortality, and that's what that was. I mean, it's just so crazy, the juxtaposition of like how I was feeling after the Ai fight, which is like I don't care, versus like the Nina Ansaroff fight. I was like, wow,
man, what a performance.
Yeah, I was talking like I kind of talked about how Nina was improving and stuff, maybe a dog, but I didn't mean it on the pre-fight show. I did not mean it. I thought Claudia Goodell was going to beat her big time. Nina was not perceived on the same level of Claudia Goodell, and she changed that. Her stand-up looked dynamite, and yeah, it's clear that I think we're going to see a pay-per-view with Nunez on top and Nina Ansaroff challenging for a title in the co-main event. I think that is down the line.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, look, you mentioned the, you know, Jessica Ai, Kaitlyn Kugan fight. That was a fight that, you know, it was the worst fight of the card. I mean, in terms of, you know, viewing pleasure. Elias Theodoro, Eric Ayners, I thought that fight was a draw personally. I thought it was a 10-8 second round for Eric Ayners. You know, Elias Theodoro, man, guy's a great personality, but, man, he's got to go for it a little more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was back-to-back rough watches between Elias and Ai's fight.
Am I the only one that feels like it's just like, I get you got to be calculated in the chances you take in a fight, but there was just times where I was just like, man, I just felt Eric Ayners was chasing Theodoro the entire fight.
Yeah, to me, the story of the fight was Ayners was being the aggressor. He was trying to finish the fight. Elias was able to neutralize that threat and do just enough to win this on the score. And that's just something that you don't want to see. I mean, look at these decision performances on the prelims. Compare what we saw out of Elias to what we saw out of Gilbert Burns. I mean, Gilbert Burns took it to Aubin Mercier. It was a fight, you watch it, it went 15 minutes, and you still were motivated to see Burns fight moving forward. I mean, that fight completely changed my perception of him and my perception of Aubin Mercier. In a negative sense. Mm-hmm. For Elias Theodoro, you watch that fight, and it's like, Eric Ayners is incredibly talented, but I'm not motivated to see him fight again. That's the difference between, I think, being aggressive inside the cage and really making sure things go well. And for Elias, I mean, he almost paid the piper there. One scorecard was for Anders. Theoretically, could have been a draw. Could have gone Anders' way. It was close, and it just wasn't appealing.
Yeah, but overall, I thought it was, you know, the pay-per-view, man, you spent $65. You felt unbelievable about the product. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed, you know, the pay-per-view, and sign me up for any Thiago Santos fight. You've got me definitely to tune in. But that is UFC 231. Coming up next here on the podcast, you're going to hear the interview portion of the show. Up first, you're going to hear my interview with Michael Chandler, who, of course, will be challenging Brent Primus in the main event of Bellator 212, a rematch for the lightweight title. Then you'll hear my conversation with Zach Otto, who's going to be taking on Dwight Clark at UFC on Fox 31 on Saturday. And then also you're going to hear my conversation with Adam Milstead, who's going to be taking on Mike Rodriguez on Saturday's UFC on Fox 31. Last week on the show, we were joined by Brent Primus, and now we're joined by the man that's going to look to regain the Bellator lightweight title, Michael Chandler. Mike, how's it going, man?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing very good. You know, I was thinking about this fight, and obviously, the two of you are not going to go out and have dinner with each other. How is this, and I know you really haven't, you said it's not a rivalry, but how would you say your differences differ between Brent Primus and, say, the Pitbull brothers?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, well, number one, the Pitbull brothers are real fighters. They've been fighting for years now. They have numerous fights. They take fights and they take fights and don't pull out of a lot of fights. They are true fighters. So I will give them that. You know, I really don't have anything against Patricky. Patricky has signed on the dotted line and stepped in the cage with me and got demolished twice. Patricio, on the other hand, wouldn't sign a contract and just continues to constantly try to drag my name through the mud with lies and all that kind of stuff. And now he's talking about ratings and he's talking about all this stuff. I've never had somebody say that many things about me. And it's not like we are, you know, he works for Coca-Cola and I work for Pepsi. You know, it's like we fight in Bellator mixed martial arts and we're only 10 pounds apart. Why don't we step into the cage and settle our differences? But he just can't seem to find a pin whenever that contract comes his way. But you know, the current champion Primus, he is who he is. You know, he's a part-time fighter. He's been fighting for 10 years and he's got 8 fights. So I'm excited to just go out there and pretty much end his career. Cause I don't really think that he wants to be a fighter. I don't think he wants to continue to fight. If he did, he would fight more than one half of a time per year. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm excited to step in the cage December 14th, man. My friends, family, and fans. I mean, everybody's so pumped up because this is a long time coming, and I'm just excited to continue to cement my legacy.
I know you mentioned about, you know, you want to beat him with an inch of his life and all that. How would you? Is that the biggest difference mentally this time getting ready to fight him as opposed to the first time?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. You know, I just think I'm getting older. I'm getting nastier. I mean, I used to have a calling on my life, and now that calling has exponentially grown. Now that I'm a father, and now that I truly am in charge of my son Hap's future. You know, when you're fighting, you get in this game, you're fighting for yourself, and you're fighting for your own personal glory. And then you get married, and you realize that now you're in charge of loving and supporting and serving another person through your fights. And now you add a child to the mix. It adds an extra layer of motivation. It actually adds an extra layer of love because my heart has never been so full and so sentimental and so palpable. And so I'm just so in love with my wife and son. Yet on the other end of the spectrum, it's never made me so nasty. I am a nastier person than I used to be. And, I think it's cool to be able to, you know, it's cool to feel that maturation process of becoming more of a softy when you need to be a softy, and then becoming more of a nasty individual when you need to be a nasty individual. And come fight night when that cage door closes, I'm going to be the nastiest I've ever been, and I'm excited to go out there and show that.
As we're talking, we're a week out from this fight because of the fact of it has taken so long to get to this rematch. Is there any part of you that thinks this fight's not going to happen? Brent doesn't show up next Friday night.
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't like to talk about it because it's obviously, I don't want to jinx it, but yeah, I mean, until that cage door closes, you know, first of all, until he shows up to Hawaii, second of all, until he shows up the weigh-ins and makes weight, and third of all, until that door actually closes, you know, that's with any mixed martial arts fight, any mixed martial arts contest. The fight isn't actually happening until it happens. You know, that's why you hear, you know, you've heard Joe Rogan, you've heard that soundbite 1,000 times. I can't believe this is really happening. You know, and that's a cool soundbite, but it shows how volatile this sport is. You know, and then when you talk about a guy who is notorious for not showing up and kind of pulling out of fights, it's a little scary, but, either way, I think basically, you know, it's on our side. The deck is stacked in our favor that he's going to show up, because he actually gets a free Hawaiian vacation out of it, you know? So I think he'll at least show up to Hawaii and take the free flight that Bellator gave him, but I just hope he actually steps into the cage.
Do you consider this fight personal? And if so, is this the first time you've had that type of feeling?
I wouldn't say personal. I think it's coupled with, because I don't care, you know, because I'm getting questions about, oh, is this one harder to swallow because you lost via injury, this, that, you know, thing. If anything, it's easier to swallow. If anything, there's very, very few people out there who actually think that he could beat me, you know? So if anything, I just need to stay, hungry, stay focused, continue to focus on being humble in this, as humble as I possibly can when we're talking about this guy. Just step into that cage and prove it. But for me, it's not really personal, man. I'm prepared to step in the cage with anybody in the entire world, anybody from Khabib on down. So I'm excited to step into that cage, and we'll see.
You know, you are obviously one of the best 155-pound fighters in the world. Is there a dream fight out there for you? Like, if you think of past and current fighters, if you could have a dream fight, what would it be?
Khabib. And not just because he's the number one guy in the world right now. Khabib is a puzzle that has not been Khabib is a puzzle that has not been solved yet. I think he's done a very good job of picking guys up and putting them down and being able to dominate them on the ground. You know, he dropped Conor with that right hand, which was surprising. So maybe we're seeing a little bit better hands out of him. Who knows? But I just think there's not many guys out there who could solve that puzzle. I truly think that in the entire world. And I think I'm one of those guys. I think I'm the guy who he's not going to be able to take down. I think I'm the guy who I can get a takedown if I want to. I'm a guy who can keep the relentless pace for 25 minutes if I need to. And I'm a guy who doesn't get, I'm not going to get frustrated and flustered whenever I can't get a takedown or my strikes aren't landing. We saw that with him against Ally Aquinta. He started to get frustrated. He couldn't take Al down. And, you know, we saw a pretty lackluster performance. And I think that's kind of the tail of the tape on that one. And I think I'm the guy to beat Khabib.
You've always talked about you're looking fights that get you excited. Disappointed when Eddie Alvarez signed with one championship?
Yeah, I mean, I was hearing rumblings. I knew he was asking for quite a bit of money from Bellator. And that, to me, Eddie knew he didn't want to sign with Bellator. Eddie knew that was a losing battle. If he comes over here, that he would get fed to me first fight. He would get beat up in the first, you know, that first fight. And then it's kind of like, where do you go from there? And then Bellator also saw that too. You know, we can't pay this guy all this money and have him come over, lose to Chandler, and then, you know, getting paid a lot of money for, you know, not that great a fight. So it's one of the things where I'm going to, you know, I'll sit down with Coker and the crew after this fight. And it's definitely something I want to see if we can make happen. You know, now that he's with one championship, so there's got to be some kind of cross promotion we can do. Send us both to Ryzen. You know, have us fight at the Saitama Super Arena in a ring. I'll wear wrestling shoes. We'll do soccer kicks to the head. It'll be a good old Eddie Alvarez versus Michael Chandler fun time.
Are you already thinking about what's next?
No, not really. You asked me about what's next, so I had to answer. But no, I mean, you know, I'm always a forward thinking individual. I've always focused on step A, but known that I'm thinking about setting up things for step B and step C. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think people who say, you know, don't overlook this or don't overlook that, or stop thinking about the next step, or are people that are afraid to think outside of their comfort zone and think outside of really stretching themselves. You know, this last year of my life has been the most challenging, most stressful, most stretching year of my life. And I'm very blessed because of it, because I've become a better man because of it. And I've learned to multitask, and I'm juggling fatherhood with and being a husband and a business owner and another business, online business owner, and a fighter and an online personality, and you know, plus trying to stay healthy. I mean, I'm juggling so many things. So I'm focused on this fight. I'm not looking past it, but I'm excited about what could be coming down the pipe with, you know, guys who are talking trash and reality TV stars and Instagram famous people and all that kind of stuff. So we'll see.
I think for the history of Bellator, and this is just my sense, and tell me if I'm wrong, I think people want to see you and Patricio.
Yeah, I mean, that would be great. But, I mean, the only way that's going to happen is if I was able to make 145, and I cannot make 145.
You don't think he'll come, you know, to 155?
Well, we gave him the opportunity with, you know, 7 weeks' notice last time, and he didn't, you know. He said he would fight me. I said yes. I actually signed the bout agreement, and I sent it to my manager, and the next day he couldn't find a pin. So I don't think he will come to 155. I think he just wants to talk trash and talk trash and talk trash, which is just interesting to me because, you know, we fight for the same organization. We're 10 pounds apart. You know, we can settle our differences inside the cage. But the truth of the matter is he's over the hill when it comes to fighting. He's past his prime, way past his prime. He started fighting really young, and he's taken a lot of damage and had a lot of wars. I'm still on the uptick. He's very much on the downtick. He's a lot smaller than me, and he's just a subpar fighter to me. So I think he understands that. So he's not actually going to step in the cage with me.
Final thing, Mike, as always, I appreciate time. Does this fight hit the second round next Friday?
I don't think so, but I'm prepared for it if it does.
And, of course, we're all going to be able to watch it on Friday night, December 14th, live on the Paramount Network from Hawaii as Michael Chandler takes on Brent Primus for the Bellator lightweight title, the main event of the fight card. Mike, as always, appreciate the time and look forward to seeing the fight, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man's going to be fighting at UFC on Fox 31 coming Saturday night, December the 15th. It'll be the featured prelim on FS1. It's Zach Otto. Zach, I appreciate the time. Of course, last time we talked, you mentioned about how this was kind of get me on this Milwaukee card. So I have to imagine your manager called you and said, hey, we've got Milwaukee. You were ecstatic.
Yeah, for sure. There was only one welterweight fight put together on the card, and it wasn't me. So I was a little disappointed in that. Was probably thinking I was going to be back sometime early 2019. But I did want to stay ready just because it's right in my own backyard, and there was a welterweight matchup. Eric Koch has kind of been, you know, a little injury prone in recent years, and coming up at 170, which was different for him, I thought maybe there's a possibility there that fight doesn't quite work out. So I should probably stay ready just in case. And so I was, you know, training hard at the gym, keeping my weight down a little bit and stuff like that, just in case something happened, or so that I could take a fight in early 2019 and, you know, jump right into a good training camp. And, last week my manager called me and he was like, all right, you called it. Coke got hurt. So you're in, man. So I was pretty ecstatic about it. It's pretty cool opportunity.
What would you say is the biggest advantage of taking a short notice fight?
Well, for me, it's because I'm always in the gym anyway. So with coaching and all that, and I stay up on my strength and conditioning. And so I'm always in pretty good shape, and I'm never rusty. So usually if I have a long training camp, 8-10 weeks, something like that, it's like it weighs on you mentally, you know, over time. And you can only eat so clean for so long, and anytime you have a piece of cake, you feel guilty, or you know what I mean? I'm always thinking about, oh, what's my opponent doing right now that I'm not doing? And it's just a lot of little things that you nitpick and stuff over a long training camp. So I kind of like it. You know, I'm in good shape. So when I got the call, I just got to get my weight down a little bit more, get, you know, fix some things and stuff like that. That's kind of specific for this guy, and then go in there and just get it done and over with. Here, I thought I'd probably be missing my Christmas or New Year's with a training camp, and then now I'm going to get it all done and over with, and I'll get to enjoy those holidays coming up here. So,
And you're taking on a guy making his UFC debut. Some people may say he's already technically had that UFC debut with the Contender Series, but this is a different animal. I mean, you're going essentially from, let's call it what it is, a gym fight, into the stage that obviously you have been on. He's won 7 in a row. His only loss came in his second pro fight. Like, when you started kind of diving into him as a fighter, what jumped out to you?
Pretty athletic guy. He's got good power in his hands, especially his right hand. But there isn't really a whole lot of film on him. A lot of the guys he's fought seem like other stand-up fighters that just seem content to kind of stand right in front of him or come at him. And he's a counter striker. He doesn't come forward with a lot of volume or anything like that. He just, looking to time that right hand, and he's putting people down with it. So it's something I have to definitely be careful about. But there just really isn't a whole lot of tape on this guy, which is so different than everybody else I fought. You know, everybody else in the UFC I fought has way more UFC experience than me. And now this is the first time where the roles are reversed. So it's kind of bringing me back to when I was on the regional level, and I'm trying to fight another guy with a good record to get myself, ahead in the regional rankings to try to get signed by a big organization. And it kind of just takes me back to those times. Not a lot of tape, so luckily enough, I think I'm well-rounded, and I can go in there and figure this guy out. I think that's one of the best things that I'm good at. It's like, I think coaching and stuff helps me with that. I can usually pick up on people, and I'm going to try to find out where we have the biggest difference in skill set and take them there.
When you were in Vegas for the Ultimate Fighter finale, were you kind of getting that itch being a coach and being in the back and like, man, I wish tonight was my night to fight?
Yeah, no, it's all good experiences to going through that and do it yourself. Going through the walkout and all that just 2 weeks before I'm about to do it myself, it really helps keep everything real comfortable. Some people that don't coach and then they go a period of time without fighting, there's got to be some rustiness and all the unknowns and stuff like that can kind of play a factor. So it all feels very natural to me and comfortable. I do it all the time.
And mention about how there's not a lot of film out there on Dwight. It seems like more and more I hear from fighters say, you know what, I just don't watch a lot of film on my opponent. Yes, I'll get the information, but I've got to worry about myself. I mean, have you ever found yourself throughout your career, or maybe you worried too much about your opponent's abilities and you didn't concentrate on yourself?
Yes and no. I think game planning for a very specific game plan is kind of the downfall, the thing that I got away from. Because once you're in there, it's a fight, and things have went completely opposite than the way that I thought they would have went. So as far as like a specific game plan, I don't really follow anymore. But as far as certain tendencies and techniques that my opponent does, I definitely need to be looking out for it. You know, for example, if a guy has got a wicked guillotine and you go all camp saying, oh, no, I got to worry about myself, and you barely practice guillotines or as much as you normally do, that's something that you got to be specifically really prepared for. So if a person has a certain tendency, you got to address that. You got to make sure you're repping that out in practice. But as far as going in with a specific game plan, that normally doesn't work out.
How much does your opponent's abilities and what they do well kind of alter, how much you do jiu-jitsu, how much you do wrestling, and how much you do striking in terms of preparing for a fight?
Yeah, I think you need to still touch on everything. Like I said, because you never really know where the fight's going to go. And then you need to address those tendencies that, you think is going to most likely happen in the fight, I feel.
You know, they always talk about those UFC jitters, when you have your first fight, first fight under the big lights. But for you, being the guy that's now been there 6 times, taking on a guy, this is his first time, how do you take advantage of that?
I think it's a great feather in my cap, especially being at home, which is really great. There's been so many times where I've went on the other side of the world to fight a more experienced person in their backyard. And, it's something that you have to overcome during the fight. And so I finally get a chance for it to be on my side. And I think it just it really helps make the moment feel right. And when everything feels right, it helps give you that confidence. And a lot of this is about confidence. You know I got the skills to beat this guy, and I just got to go in there and execute. And all those good feelings help give me that good confidence.
Fighting at home. Some guys love it. Some guys hate it. For you, I mean, you know, what's kind of, is it more just, you're just excited to fight in front of the hometown?
I for people that know me, they know I'm a huge Wisconsin person. You know, born and raised in Milwaukee, and I really have a lot of pride about my city and my state. And to be back here after a long time of traveling around is really, it means something to me. I really want to put on a great show for the fans. Milwaukee's one of those cities where it's a big city, but it's not too big. So you really get a chance to know people, and just from either running the gym or fighting and stuff like that. Being around here my whole life, I worked in the service industry for years. So I'm excited for everybody to come out and enjoy the new arena that we got in Milwaukee and watch some kick-ass fights.
Now, for fans who maybe are going to be coming into Milwaukee that weekend to watch the UFC fights, they're not from Milwaukee, they're not from Wisconsin. Is there kind of one or two things they've got to do while they're in town?
We're known for, you know, drinking beer and eating sausage and cheese and stuff. So if you can get your hands on any cheese curds, I'd do that. A lot of restaurants have them. Stay away from the chain places, of course, wherever you go. Always try and get the mom and pop places. And then go on some brewery tours. We got great brewery tours in Milwaukee, Lakefront Brewery. Hit them up over the weekend. Get some good taste in beer. I know I am as soon as I win this fight, so.
Is it kind of like, do you have that mindset of like, okay, Sunday afternoon, we're celebrating the victory, I'm going to this brewery to get this beer? Like, is there already an item list set?
Oh, I have a full list usually of what places I want to go eat and, you know, have some drinks and stuff. This is now a short, intense training camp, so it hasn't weighed on me quite yet. I'm sure over the next week I'm going to be, you know, putting my list together here and find out what I want to do. So I just got the fight. I'll have to think about it a little bit. But I do have some friends and family coming in from out of town to come watch the fight. I got friends coming from all over the place. So it should be a pretty fun Saturday night.
And, of course, everyone's going to be able to check this out as the feature prelim on FS1, UFC on Fox 31. The TV prelims will start at 5 p.m. each time. Then, of course, your four-fight main card on Fox at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Zach, as always, man, I appreciate time. Let everyone know they can find you on social media and also any of those sponsors that help support you.
Yeah, cool. You can find me on social media. I'm on Facebook and Instagram just under my name, Zach Otter. And then on Twitter, I have a handle at TheBarbarianMMA. Want to throw a shout out to my team, Pura Vida, BJJ, and MMA right here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. A lot of up-and-comers. Leah Letson just got a big win this last weekend, so we're killing it. Right after me, Montel Jackson's fighting at the end of the month in December out in Vegas. So just wishing luck to him and everybody else that we got coming up with fights. And then I just got some Quest Nutrition bars and protein. So I want to throw a big shout out to them. They're always hooking me up with supplements and energy and protein bars and all that stuff. So yeah, that's it. Thanks a lot, Jason. Thanks for having me on. Always good talking.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man's going to step back inside the UFC Octagon, UFC on Fox 31, December the 15th, as he takes on Mike Rodriguez. It's Adam Milstead, who's 8-2 with one no contest in his career. Adam, appreciate time. You kind of made a little news in another interview you did where you talked about this being the last fight in your deal, and if you don't get the win, this could be it for you. Has this been something that's been on your mind for a while?
It has. My life is not saying it's any more hectic than anybody else, but for me personally, busting my ass to get to my job in the morning, 6-7 o'clock in the morning, work until 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, coming home, grabbing my stuff, going to gym, doing that. I've been doing that for the last 10 years of my mixed martial arts career. And I'm not going back to fighting in parking garages and bars and stuff like that just so I can keep doing this crazy cycle. You know, I'm a blue-collar American. I work hard for the little money that I have. I'm overtaxed and underpaid and all that good stuff. And it's really hard to keep up this lifestyle. If I don't have the opportunity, there's no reason to do it. So that's why I'm saying if I don't secure another contract with the UFC, it's most likely the end of my career.
You know, and I know you put a picture out on your social media of your day job, and you know that kind of that creates a lot of conversation on social media about what would you kind of say to people who are either pro or negative about, you know, hey, you know, why does this guy have a full time job along with being a fighter?
I didn't when I posted that, I didn't mean to necessarily get the UFC involved in a negative way. I actually was just honestly curious. I was looking at an interview of my opponent, Mike Rodriguez, where he was surprised that I still had a full-time job. And it got me thinking. I'm like, well, what the heck do these guys do? Like, how do they have people that take care of them and stuff like that? And so I was real concerned. I'm like, is there a way that I could be doing this and not working my ass off? And so I posted that just in hopes that people, you know, could kind of, you know, alleviate my concerns. And it just turned into something crazy. It just turned into people just be like bashing UFC. Why is this guy a professional athlete? One of the hardest working athletes out there, yet he's still got to work a full-time job. For me personally, as someone who's been around other businessmen and stuff like that, I understand that the UFC is still young. It's still in its baby stages, and most of their money is going into trying to get exposure, trying to get their name out there, which is like you're talking about the ESPN deal is a big deal. You know, it's going to be something that's going to help bring more people into the sport and eventually bring more money in. But until that time, you know, I'm stuck doing what I have to do. I have to be independent because I got no one really to take care of me. This is it's always been on me. It always has been, and from the way it looks like, it's always going to be that way. So you do what you can to survive. And my thing is working a full time, sometime overtime job.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Stipe Miocic, who's, you know, been the UFC heavyweight champion, he has a regular job as a firefighter. I think there's more fighters that have jobs outside of MMA than I think people, you know, kind of realize. But hey, man, it's a part of the lifestyle. You know, of course, the last time we saw you was back in March at UFC 222, unable to get the victory on that night, split decision loss. What was kind of your major takeaways from that fight?
Don't leave it to the judges, because the judges don't know what the hell they're talking about a lot of the times. I mean, I can tell you one thing's for sure. I'm not a very good decision fighter because apparently I'm clueless on how you win fights. I thought, you know, when you tag the guy every single round, you defend, you know, 90% of their takedowns, that was going to secure you the win. But who knows, man? So I'm at a loss. I'm more confused after that fight than I was before. But the one thing that I am going to take away from it is that I'm no longer going to let it go to the judges. I'm going to do everything I can to finish the fight, stay in front of the guy's face, stay in the pocket, throw down as much as I can, or, you know, care to let it go to a decision anymore. I don't want people to watch my fights and say, you know, this guy's going to try to scrub out, you know, a three-round win. So, I mean, like I said before, I mean, the whole scoring thing has really confused me because I've seen other fights who are very similar to mine go into the fighters like my decision, you know, like it went to my side because I was willing to stand in a pocket and fight while this guy was just cuddling me for three rounds.
And of course, you know, the past couple of years, it's been a long couple of years, I'd have to say, probably for you. You know, the knee injury and, you know, just things like going your way. I mean, you know, I was looking May 29th, 2016, the actual last time you got the official victory. I mean, does it feel like it's been that long for you?
It feels like it's been a lifetime. since I felt my hand raised. And, you know, on paper, it doesn't look that bad, but in my book, it does. And I don't like it. And, I mean, that's why I'm going for broke here, you know. Yeah, it's my last fight on the contract. You know, so if it ends up being my last one, I want to go out in a blaze of glory. I want to make sure that, you know, I go out there with the intention of knocking this guy out, or he tries to do the same and it ends up being one hell of a fight. People are on their feet standing. And if I end up losing, then that's fine. But I had a war, had a great battle. It was a good one to end on. And, you know, I can move on from there. But of course, obviously if I win, hopefully in the UFC's eyes, it earns me another contract and I can keep moving forward on this crazy lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, I think when this fight was announced, I think for a lot of people, they're like, man, these are two guys who are going to go out there and they're going to throw down. And someone's most likely going to, you know, be dropped and finish in this fight. Was that kind of, when the fight was brought to you, were you thinking, man, this is the kind of style fight I want?
Yeah. The very first time I ever heard his name thrown out to me, my manager just texted to me and said, you want to fight Mike Rodriguez? And, at that particular time, I was stressing. Like, I wanted a fight. I wanted to get another fight in. I was like, let's go fight. I don't even care who it is. So as soon as he brought up the name, I was like, all right, fine, set it up. He's like, cool, man. And, like, on the way to the gym, I pull into the parking lot, and I'm like, maybe I should look this guy up, you know? Like, this could be some animal, you know, that I don't know about or whatever. But so I looked him up, and he's a great striker. He's a good tactician. Striking wise, and I was like, fantastic. I was like, other than him being southpaw, I mean, it's pretty much perfect. You know, I just got to get used to fighting a lefty. But yeah, I was like, all right, well, now we got an opportunity to put on a show. Number two, I got an opportunity to showcase my skills a little bit more, because every other fighter that I've fought has either been a grappler or a wrestler. And then at the same time, you know, that this is a great opportunity for the UFC to see that I have potential and that, you know, maybe we should re-sign this guy and keep him going and keep him getting better and keep giving him fights that people are going to want to see.
What's the biggest challenge for you in fighting a southpaw?
Just the idea that there's very few southpaws out there, so you don't have a chance to really get comfortable with it. You know, but I like a challenge. You know, and so southpaws always have the advantage in the fight. They're normally used to going up against orthodox fighters, as orthodox fighters are used to going up against orthodox fighters. So, you know, you're at a disadvantage there, but I still like it. And you know, the more and more I've been working, the more I see a lot more openings on a southpaw than I do an orthodox. So it's going to be interesting. It'll be a fun fight, as crazy as that sounds. Yeah, I'm looking forward to going out there and getting my hand raised.
And, of course, this all goes down on December the 15th in Milwaukee, UFC on Fox 31. You'll see this fight a part of the prelims. Adam, as always, I appreciate time. Let everyone know they can find out on social media if there's any sponsors that are helping out for this one.
Yeah. You can find me pretty much in any platform at Adam Milstead. You know, you guys hit me up. I'll do what I can to get back to everybody who messaged me and comments on my stuff. As far as sponsors go, I want to thank LED Decoys, a duck company, duck decoy company. I like to hunt, people don't know. Then Jigsaw Massage, Sun Therapy Pro, Notch Hats, and right off the top of my head, I'm trying hard to think about it. Crap, I can't think of anything else. I'm driving right now, so I'm like, oh, I'm all over the place. So, but thank you, man. Thanks for helping get my story out there and put me in the public's eye.
And there was my conversations with Michael Chandler, Zach Otto, and Adam Milstead. Love that conversation with Michael Chandler, man. He always brings it. So appreciate Mike, Zach, and Adam all coming on this week's edition of the podcast. Of course, Michael Chandler, Brent Primus, the main event of Bellator 212. Of course, if you didn't listen to last week's episode, we had Brent Primus on. You can check out that conversation on the MMAreport.com. And that card's on Friday night on the Paramount Network. I'll be watching on the Zone because, well, I don't have cable or satellite anymore. I have YouTube TV, so Paramount not a part of YouTube TV, so I'll be watching on the Zone. And is it just me, Daniel, or do you feel like Bellator's got a lot of buzz going into this weekend?
I feel like they do, man, and I think it's the fact that you got two great main events. You have a great main event on Friday, and you have a great fighter in Ali Malay McFarland the following day. I think Ali Malay is, man, she's becoming one of the stars for Bellator.
No, she is, but I'll tell you what. On Saturday's Bellator card, my number one fight is Neiman Gracie Ed Roof.
That's your number one fight? That could be a great grappling contest.
Yeah, you know? I know. I mean, in terms of the fights that Chandler Primus, obviously clear cut, number one fight on Friday night. On Saturday for Bellator, that's a fight that has me the most interested. Saturday's Bellator card, which is exclusive on DAZN, that is a great lineup that you're going to see. You mentioned about Ali Malay McFarlane versus Valerio Turno. I think it's going to tell us a lot about Ali Malay McFarlane. We've got Leo Machida versus Rafael Carvalho. Also, King Mo against Liam McGeary. And Kona Oliveira against Nano Dung, who actually I did an interview. It's up on themmayreport.com. You can check that out. There's actually the history between those two guys actually go back to when they were 9 years old. And a fight that's not necessarily personal, but clearly there's a little bad blood between those two guys. But Ruth Gracie is one that really sticks out to me. When it comes to Friday's card, along with Primus and Chandler, I mean, Frank Mir, Javi Ayala, I mean, I feel like we have heard absolutely nothing about Frank Mir leading up to this fight. You also got AJ McKee versus Daniel Crawford, Derek Campos versus Sam Cecilia. If you head over to themmayreport.com, you can listen to my interviews with both of those guys. A big part of the conversation with Derek Campos was his decision to move down to 145 pounds. And with Sam, we talked about recently training with the military up where he lives, also talked about being a father. And he even joked about it. He's like, yeah, when this fight was offered me, like I had to ask a couple of times of whether or not this was being offered a 155-pound fight. And also we've got another women's flyweight matchup on the card, Alejandra Lara versus Juliana Vasquez. Vasquez 7-0 in her career. Of course, Lara coming off that loss to Ali Malay McFarlane. Primus Chandler, it's tough to really give Brent Primus much of a shot in this fight.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, this guy's incredibly talented, but you watch their fight. I mean, this was a freak injury that landed him the title. Michael Chandler is just so incredibly talented, and you look at this contest and you just think straight up with the stand-up, things aren't going to go well. Chandler has such a great wrestling base. Primus is also a great grappler, but I think heading into this fight, it's hard not to pick Chandler, and I do think he's real motivated to get that title back and get the win, and I think we'll see him get a finish here. I'm excited for it. It's the fight that I'm looking forward to the most, and it's obvious between these two Bellator cards. But, yeah, that's a great fight.
Okay.
Frank, what's that?
I got to mention this about Michael Chandler, Brent Primus. So I just go over to bestfightodds.com.
Uh-huh.
And so this is, we're recording this here Wednesday morning, 9:50 East Coast time, 8:50 Central time where Daniel's at. Michael Chandler opened up at plus 280? This can't be right.
He opened up at 280?
I'm on Best Fight Odds and you can click the history. It says plus 280. That has to be minus 280. That has to be a mistake.
Oh, that has to be. Because he's at, what, minus 500 now? There's no way. It's probably not a mistake.
Okay, Best Fight Odds has to have this wrong. They have to have this wrong. Because it lists Brent Primus opening up on five dimes December the 9th at 11:36 at minus 400. I think they've got their graphics mixed up here.
I don't think so. Because, like, I don't know.
There is no way Brent Primus opened up as a favorite. No goddamn way. That graphic has to be wrong, Daniel. Has to be wrong.
I'm trying to figure out. I'm trying to look up another website to figure it out. Because, yeah, I mean, in some places you'll get Chandler at like 600, minus 600.
Man. Dude, if you told me, if you came to me at that time and said, hey, Jason, Five Dimes got Michael Chandler plus 280, I am rushing to create a Five Dimes account.
Look, man, look, Brent Primus did beat Michael Chandler, all right, via TKO injury in 60 seconds or something like that. So that probably won't repeat itself. But, hey, man, he's a defending champion, and at the end of the day, you know, you catch right. him in a choke.
Let's make a little prediction here. When this fight happens Friday night, I want to say card starts at 10 p.m. Eastern time. So they're probably going to walk into the cage somewhere probably close to midnight Eastern time. Is Michael Chandler a 7-1 betting favorite?
I think so. I mean, I think you'll find him a 7-1 betting favorite in a lot of places, but on Five Dimes, possible.
Dude, right now at minus 490, if you're going to place a bet on it, you better place a bet on it now. Because that line is going to keep going up.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a very good relationship with Brent Primus. I think, you know, but I just think this is stylistically, it's a bad fight for him.
It's hard for him to bring the fight down on the ground against Michael Chandler. And it's going to be incredibly difficult.
To me, the path to Brent Primus winning this fight has to be getting it to the fifth round and potentially having a worn out Michael Chandler, and he gets a fifth round stoppage.
Yeah, I could see that too. But it's going to be tough to survive. Like, again, I do think this ends in the second. And it probably could end in the first, but I'm
telling you, I don't think it makes out of the first round.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, Chandler's got dynamite hands. And look, we're disrespecting Primus, so he's going to go out there and win. But with good reason, just because it was a shock when he got the title because a crazy freak accident happened. I mean, he got the title shot without getting too many quality victories. And we haven't seen him in the cage against that many quality guys. Whereas Chandler, it's time and again, he looks like a human highlight reel against solid Bellator lightweight. So
Can we please get Chandler Patricio Pitbull next, please?
Can we get that next? And you know what else? I never want to be this not excited for an AJ McKee fight again. I don't care about this fight. I do not care. Yeah. AJ McKee is so talented. I want to see him fight good guys.
Yeah, I mean, when this fight was announced, you're kind of like, look, Daniel Crawford, he's 10-2 in his career, but he is coming off a split decision loss at Bellator 200 against Pedro Carvalho. I mean, he's a former Bama fighter, but yeah, I'm with you. It's tough to get excited about this. It's like, I want to see AJ McKee against one of the top five Bellator featherweights.
Dude, absolutely. And so that's my thought there. Frank Mir's, I think, going to lose to my homie Javi Ayala in the first round.
Dude, is it just me if we heard absolutely nothing about Frank Mir leading up to this fight?
He's just not in Hawaii. He's been missing, and they just can't get him.
Can I tell you how jealous I am of John Morgan just chilling in Hawaii covering this event?
Hey, man, some days you're in Idaho and some days you're in Hawaii if you're going to every event. And man, he won it.
Tough gig. Tough gig for John Morgan this week.
I know. USA Today is going to look at their expenses and be like, $5,000 at a tiki bar? Like, yeah, man, I would enjoy it. And I'm looking forward to seeing the production, man. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to the Zone only broadcast on Saturday. I mean, the thing about the Zone broadcast is that Lyoto Machida Rafael Carvalho fight might be awful. Like, it might be two guys staring at each other because – a lot of times these guys play it super cautious, look for the counter strike, and they might just stare at each other until they're blue in the face.
Yeah, I'll tell you one of the interesting things, and I'll have some interviews up here over the next day or so. I've talked to a lot of the Hawaiian fighters who are on the preliminary cards of this one, and they've all talked about, said, man, it was everyone was petitioning to get on this card. This is a huge event in Hawaii, and you really got to like what Bellator is doing. I mean, they're doing a lot of great things. I'll be honest with you, I'm probably not going to watch Saturday's event live just because I'll be in Baltimore. And, you know, I'll probably be, you know, a little sightseeing, you know, finding the quality sports bars in Baltimore. But, they're not going to have the Zone on. Let's just be honest about it. You know, maybe by the time I get back to my hotel, maybe we'll see what's going on, but I'll probably watch these the Saturday fights via DVR, but definitely we'll be watching Friday night live. And of course, Saturday we've got the UFC on Fox 31 card, the final Fox event for the UFC. Kevin Lee, Ally Quinta, Edson Barboza versus Rob Font. Also, we've got Jim Miller versus the Bronx, Charles Oliveira. I mean, look, I love this main card. I think it's an awesome main card that they're putting on. When you look at the preliminary card, you've got Zach Otto, who you heard for a little while ago, against Dwight Grant, Bobby Green versus Jakar Close, Jared Gordon against Joaquin Silva, Gerald Merchard against Jack Hermanson, Dan Ige against Jordan Griffin, Jessica Rose Clark versus Andrea Lee, Adam Milstead versus Mike Rodriguez, Trevor Smith versus Zach Cummings, and Chris De La Rocha versus Juan Adams. You know, in terms of the prelims, interested to see the UFC debut of Juan Adams. Milstead Rodriguez could be this week's version of Thiago Santos versus Jamie Manoa. I almost feel like that maybe those two guys are just going to have an agreement that no takedowns allowed, and they're just going to bang it out in there. In terms of the FS1 prelims, man, you know, the UFC debut of Dwight Clark's interesting. You know, not too much else really sticks out to me about those. But the main card, I love all four of those fights.
Yeah, this UFC Fox card is all about those four main card fights. I mean, they've been booking the hell out of the main card fights for the hardcore fan. I mean, these past Fox cards have been great for the hardcore fan. And every single one of these fights is an absolute banger. Lee versus Aquinta is going to be a great fight. I think Barboza Hooker, obviously phenomenal. Sergio Pettis and Rob Font is a great, great fight. And, of course, Miller and Oliveira is going to be a fight in which I anticipate scramble after scramble after scramble. So I, for one, am super excited. I will say, in terms of predicting, like, I don't look at any of these heavy underdogs and feel motivated to pick them. Other than, and he's not even a big underdog, but I do think Pettis will beat Rob Font. But in terms of Miller or Iaquinta versus Lee and Oliveira, I think Lee and Charles get those victories.
No, I like Rob Font in that matchup against Sergio Pettis. I think the size, I think there's going to be a considerable size disadvantage there for Sergio Pettis. Oliveira Miller, can we just get those fight? Can we just start in a grappling position between those two guys?
I mean, they'll get there, Jason. They absolutely will, because that's Oliveira when he's greatest. And Miller, just Miller's the type of guy who he may not have the credentials of a jiu-jitsu expert he goes up against, but even if he goes up against this jiu-jitsu wizard, he still finds a way to make it competitive and put himself in good spots. He's just an absolute grinder.
Yeah, I mean, Hooker, looking at the betting odds, Hooker Barboza, a pick'em, you know, right now between those two guys. Kevin Lee, a 3-1 favorite. Man, you know, I kind of feel like some people might be sleeping on Ally Quinta a little bit here. I'm not saying I'm picking out to win the fight, but man, I feel like people are a little doubting him here.
Yeah, I think so too, man. I mean, I'm not picking him either, but the odds, I think, should be closer. I mean, Ray Janelle is so talented just because. The problem with the issue is maybe inactivity over the years. He hasn't been in the cage every year for the past 3 years. I mean, yeah. So that may be why. So it's hard to gauge his true talent level when he's going up against a guy in Kevin Lee, who we just saw take out Edson Barboza, who we saw go on that impressive run in 2016 and 2017. So I think that's why people are gravitating towards Lee, but Reginald could absolutely pull off that win. So, don't discount him. I think Dan Hooker's going to beat Barboza, but that's a fight in which you have one guy going downwards, one guy going upwards, and the question is if they meet.
I tell you, you know, as I look at all three of these fight cards, I don't feel like there's a clear, this is the best fight of the weekend. Do you feel that same way, or do you feel like there's a clear best fight of the weekend?
It's not clear, Jason, but the fight I'm looking forward to the most is Kevin Lee versus Al. That's the one I'm looking forward to the most, but it's not clear. I understand why someone would go with Chandler Primus just to see Chandler fight again, but to me, the UFC Fox main event's the best fight of the weekend.
I like the Hooker Barboza fight.
That fight to me is more entertaining, theoretically, but it's just like the importance of the Fox main event outweighs the Barboza Hooker fight. But Barboza Hooker is going to be phenomenal.
Yeah. I mean, the 4-fight main card, I think, is very good. I've also noticed, I don't know if you've noticed the same thing. Just in, you know, watching, you know, the Fox Sports regional channels here in Tampa Bay with watching the Magic games and watching the Lightning games. I've seen a lot of advertising for the boxing show on Fox next week. I have not seen one ad for the UFC event.
Oh, dude, they're coming across like a divorced couple counting down the days until they can move out.
It seems like that because I was watching, I forget, I think maybe I was watching a Magic game the other night. And I was just like, the boxing commercial came on. I'm sitting here going, I don't think I have seen one promotion for this UFC event. Even when I got home from the game last Sunday, I was watching Cowboys Eagles, and there was a commercial for the boxing, but no commercial for the UFC. It's almost like, is Fox just saying we really don't care what happens on Saturday?
Yeah, they might as well. We already got our money, and we know you're going to ESPN, so get the hell out. Don't let the door hit you on the back. I mean, why would you put resources in something that's leaving, you know?
Yeah, I know. It just jumped out to me. By the way, speaking of TV deals, One Championship has got a deal with Turner where, they're going to basically tape delay broadcasts on TNT, but looks like they're going to be a part of the live platform on Bleacher Report Live, which is their streaming service, which just means another goddamn streaming service MMA fan has to watch. But this is the honest thing. One's been available for free on their app. I think I've maybe watched one of it.
Yeah, I hope we don't have to pay for Bleacher Report Live. I'm pretty sure we do. And yeah, but
unfortunately,
I can understand.
When Eddie Alvarez fights or Demetrius Johnson fights, I'll probably find myself paying for it. But man, yeah, it's another one of these scenarios where you just feel like all these media companies and MMA promotion, it's like they're trying to nickel and dime everything they can out of the MMA fan.
Yeah. And at some point, you got to cut costs. One FC has plenty of momentum with Demetrius and Alvarez and Sage Northcutt, I guess, down the line. But, hey, if they get on TNT with some compilation shows, that's good for the brand.
Why do I feel we got a Sage Northcutt reality show coming our way? Can we get a Sage Northcutt, Charles Barkley living together reality show?
That sounds great. That sounds absolutely fantastic. Look, I mean, that might be what they're building towards, because they mentioned a reality show, and I don't want to see another version of The Ultimate Fighter. But Sage Northcutt, I might watch.
Dude, like, they're talking about The Ultimate Fighter continuing potentially on a digital platform for ESPN. I'm like, why? Why are you continuing with this show?
It's going to outlive us. The Ultimate Fighter will absolutely outlive us, Jason.
To me, the only thing is you can lock a guy into a multi-fight deal.
Yeah.
At a very cheap rate. I love how they're always like, six-figure contract. Yeah, that's for six fights.
Yeah.
It sounds great when you say you've earned a six-figure contract. Then you realize, oh, yeah, that's for multiple fights.
Yeah, yeah. It's not as, it's not $100,000 per fight.
Hello, 10 and 10.
Yeah.
12 and 12.
Yeah. Yeah. Hello, normal UFC contract.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said last week on the show, the only people that care about that are the fighters that go on it.
Yep. And their family members. And that's about it.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, let's end on this note this week. So UFC 233, January 26th, completely in shambles. We have no main event. Dominic Cruz apparently out of his fight against John Lineker. It appears at this point your main event is Ben Askren, Robbie Lawler. Hot take alert. The Bellator card that night is 1,000 times better than the UFC card.
You know, you might be right as we're speaking. I know you mentioned you told me they just added Juan Archuleta against Bandejas on that card.
Love that fight. That is an awesome fight.
Yeah, so, thus far you can give it to him. It's in shambles. But at the end of the day, Jason, I don't know, man.
Look, I love how Dana White wants a rail on Tyron Woodley just because he won't accept a fight while he's hurt.
Yeah, Dana White really hates Tyron Woodley is what I've learned.
You think?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I gotta find out. There was a tweet I saw that was comparing the two cards, and it's amazing how much better one card is over the other. I mean, it's crazy how much better. The Bellator card is just... it's just tremendous. I mean, obviously, Fedor against Ryan Bader. I don't think that is going to be everyone's cup of tea. I think there is, certain people that will look at that card and will say, okay, I like that main event, but you got Aaron Pico's on that card as well. I mean, to me, and we'll see what happens with the UFC card. This is my gut feeling. I think we're going to see Usman Askren for the interim title.
Okay, I could see that for sure. And at the end of the day, like, the UFC 233 card, look, to me, whatever Askren fight is, that's the fight I'm looking forward to the most, just because I want to see him in the UFC. But then you start looking at 2, 3, 4, and 5, which are those, and most of those fights will be the Bellator fights. But yeah, Askren Usman would be interesting, Jason, but I don't know. I think it might just be Askren Lawler, but I mean, you could be right.
I mean, look, you're still interested in seeing what that card's going, you know, what will they'll end up doing at UFC 233. I mean, we're all interested in what that event could be. I mean, look, you've got, you know, I'm sure there'll be some wrestling fans that are going to tune in for Jack Swagger's Bellator debut taking on JW Kaiser. I'm sure there's going to be people that are going to be interested in that fight. I guess it's one of those fights that I don't know what my interest level really is in that fight, because we just don't know what it's going to be. I mean, you got, you know, Musasi against Lovato Jr.'s on that card, Aaron Pico, Henry Corrales, you know, and we mentioned the other fights. You know, when you look at that UFC 233 card, obviously I was really interested in that Dominic Cruz, John Lineker fight, but we look at what we now know with that card. You know, you got Joseph Benavidez versus Davison Figueiredo, Courtney Casey against Cynthia Calvillo, James Vick versus Paul Felder. Yeah, there's just, you know, right now, I mean, the UFC's got to do something to make that a pay-per-view worthy card.
Yeah, they got to do something. And again, every time there used to be a point in time where you felt confident they could, but obviously we have seen cases where they just can't. And that's what happens when you have so many events and so few stars.
Yeah, and we'll see what's going to happen. But that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast. Do want to thank Michael Chandler, Zach Otto, and Adam Milstead for coming on this week's edition of the podcast. Of course, next week we'll be back to recap everything that happens this weekend. Plus, we'll start getting ready for UFC 232, which is going to take place at the end of the month. Of course, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and a new episode comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Richard asks, what was your thoughts on Will Greer skipping the ball game? Richard, the ball game and skipping ball games, obviously, it's topical. It's timely. I admit I don't like it, but I'm old school. I understand it. This is why, Richard, I've said what I've said about we need to make the bowl games an extension of the regular season to where I think we'd have less of this, these guys sitting out. These games would be more meaningful. They would contribute towards potentially something and getting an invite. I think what it's done is the playoffs have made the other bowl games less and less meaningful. And if you're not playing in one of those games and you're a prospect, it has an effect. Don't think Jalen Smith's injury in the Fiesta Bowl a few years ago when he was at Notre Dame playing against Ohio State, that has a tremendous impact. It affected him. Agents are telling him not to play. It's not a smart thing. He had only something to lose. So I don't like it personally. I want to see these guys play and compete, but I understand it. And I don't really hold it against them. We haven't seen quarterbacks skip these games. Will Greer's maybe starting a trend in that regard. It's not going to surprise me.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.